The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, die good riddance. That man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you died of pursuit.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USAE. Today is Friday. It is April the 22nd, 2016, headed into a weekend. Of course, many people headed into this weekend with heavy hearts, but also joyous hearts as they celebrate the music and the life of Prince Roger Nelson. Most people know him either as Prince or the artist formerly known as Prince, but his name was Prince Roger Nelson, and this man had a huge influence on music. So a lot of people are saddened to hear about his death, and then, you know, others are also, you know, just joyous upon celebrating his life, work, and the influence that he had. Prince, I don't think, is one that you could put into a box, and I want to talk a little bit about him today, but also how it relates to politics. I have to do a show about him because I grew up as a teenager as a Prince fan. Anybody in the family will tell you, you know, who, if they ask you who is Scotty's favorite music artist, it would be Prince. As well as many of my friends. My mother had called me the other day and said she still has a photograph of me in high school with standing next to a poster of my favorite music artist, Prince. So the man did have a lot of influence on my thinking, as well as, you know, man, his music, he challenged you to listen to every note. Music is a lot different now, as you know, everything's digital and what have you. But if you, you know, grew up in the day or ever had the opportunity to listen to music on wax, as they say, you know, the records, the that you put on, you know, the turntable and whatnot, and you know, when you listen to that through some, you know, really good speakers or some headphones, and I mean, it just challenges you to to hear all these different sounds and recognize how they're just wonderfully composed. I mean, the man was a genius on every level, and he challenged a lot of people's thinking. A lot of people, you know, didn't really get him because he challenged people to on genderism. His music also, I think, you know, promoted a lot of women and equality, promoted their rights and whatnot. Sexual revolution, continuation of the sexual revolution of the 60s as well, blending the gender lines, you know, that I heard somebody talk about, you know, the symbol when he was fighting against Warner Brothers, the music plantation, and you know, there's that iconic photo with him with slave carved into his cheek because he signed as a very young person at 16 or 17 years old, and they basically own his name. So without getting into the details of that, you know, he was fighting against total enslavement. So his influence is just, you know, but anyway, going back to the symbol, and some people would accuse him of being a homosexual, and he would challenge you. His cover art, when he first came out, first started touring, and the way that he was dressed, and, you know, people was like, you know, who is this? And they used the derogatory term fag and whatnot, and I heard that they threw trash at him off the stage, and it was white people. He was at a white rock concert, and, you know, and he kind of cleaned it up after that, but, you know, so, but he challenged you, and people was thinking that he was a homosexual and all this and that, but if you listen to the music, not to say that a man who prefers other men or enter into those type of relationship with other men can't write songs about women. I'm sure that has happened a lot. But if you listen to his music, you know, he was always, it was very clear and evident that he was heterosexual, and his image wasn't just his image, but he lived that life. I actually know somebody who had an opportunity to work with him in a time as a dancer, going back to what, my seventh grade, going back to seventh grade, sweetheart and whatnot, and in Detroit. And then I left Detroit, and she continued on with her dancing, which she was focused on even back then. And later, Lorraine had an opportunity to work, I think about a year, maybe two, on Prince in the Times tour and what have you. And, you know, she shared some personal things. She said he was always about that music, always just focused, you know, focused on his music. And they saying that, you know, he was found dead in an elevator at the Paisley Park studio. So I'm just trying to let you know, I grew up a Prince fan, and it has even made me reassess some things that I've said on air in terms of influencing me to get interested in politics and, you know, just social issues and racial equality and all of those things. And I usually would give that credit to Public Enemy, you know, very influential, record-breaking, you know, historical group in the area of hip-hop, that genre of music and hip hop, because they, you know, I'm not going to say they introduced me to Malcolm. Certainly I heard Malcolm X's name from time to time and what have you, but, you know, as a teen, I was in what, my 20s, going in the military, 87, I think, you know, some of their work was done. Public Enemy, you know, introduce you to Farrakhan, introduce you to Elijah Muhammad's teaching, Malcolm X, heavy on Malcolm X, and just, you know, black militancy and politics and what have you. And so I used to state on air that was my first really, you know, exposure to any kind of, you know, political philosophy and what have you. But since I've been reflecting on, you know, my musical memory since the passing of Prince, and just going back over some of the albums, the many albums that he put out, and then recognizing, no, you know, because Prince came out with Controversy, the album Controversy, and it has a title song Controversy, you know, in 1981, which was, you know, preceding the rise and popularity of the Public Enemy. And Prince was talking a lot about, he talked a lot about war in his music, nuclear war, you know, reflecting on the Reagan administration at that time. You know, he talked a lot of about a whole lot of different issues of the day, if you have. And that's so rare. I don't know, really. I can't comment on what I don't listen to. But I don't listen to, you know, any kind of music, popular music today. I don't tune in to Clear Channels radio station from a playlist that they pick of black people signed as slaves to some of these music labels, you know. And I really don't, I shouldn't use that metaphor for slavery when we got people in real slavery, like the prisoners striking in Texas, Alabama, Louisiana, and other places. But yeah, so if you have any thoughts on his music, any what kind of ways did it influence you in other areas than just entertainment and whatnot? One of the things also he most known for, I would say this about Prince, I haven't heard anybody say, and this is speaking as a high school student at the time, you know, and he kind of brought the opposite sexes closer. Together, meaning, you know, men and women together, or, you know, boys and girls together, because nobody could write a, what they call a ballad, a love song. You read some of the lyrics in the many, many different ballads and love songs, you know, where, you know, people who was hitting up the club, who participated in that kind of socialization and whatnot, and, you know what a slow dance is. On the dance floor, you know, with a pretty girl and what have you. And his music, you know, now I would not recommend that high school students, if I was a parent and knew, you know, the depth and the breadth of the sexualization in some of his music, I would not let my daughters listen to Prince. But be it as there as it was, you know, I got exposed to that music. And then again, the music, just the music, because he was a composer. He wasn't just, you know, a person who could play instruments, play, you know, just about every instrument, and had done so on, you know, at least his first four albums or something like that. Play every instrument, but, you know, laying track over tracks and, you know, playing the instruments. I mean, he was really a genius, a composer. I think, you know, also his influence was, I can't say he was the first to do it or anything, but I know a lot of his music really incorporated violins, you know, and they go to the more sensual, more pop-like, you know, I mean, this dude was deep on so many levels with his music. It wasn't just all this or that. But, you know, it covered a lot of different people, activity areas, and, you know, even talked about racism in his lyrics. You know, am I black or white? Am I straight or gay? You know, challenging these labels and what have you, and saying he wished these rules didn't exist. And what rules is he talking about? Well, as I reflect, you know, back then, you know, I didn't even look at it in a counter-racist term, but that's, you know, when you really break down what is what people call white supremacy, well, it's a code. It's a code of laws. It's a code of laws put into place through politics, and they created these labels and categories and what have you, which delegated how people were going to be treated based on that code. And so he was, I wish these rules didn't exist. I think that was in controversy. So, I mean, he really challenged you to think, you know, on deeper levels, you know, from, and I was a big fan. I mean, when I say I was a fan, that means every album that came out, you bought it. You listened to every last single track. You turned the record over, the album over on the flip side. And then some of his B-side, you know, music. I mean, this guy, just prolific, a prolific artist. Yeah. So if you got any thoughts on that, definitely going to sample some of the tracks and talk about. But also, what killed Prince? Well, you know, all we can do is speculate on what we can get from the mainstream media, and, you know, then people close to him, family members, people who knew him, people who worked with him, who have been speaking and whatnot, you know. And then there are, you know, these, the timing of his death, the people saying it's a conspiracy. As soon as he got control of his record catalog, finally won that battle of no longer being, you know, held involuntary servitude, having his wealth stolen by Warner Brothers and what have you. Now he passes away. Oh, he was healthy. And you know, so there are some conspiracy theories. And, you know, speculation is healthy. That's how you get to the truth. You know, consider everything. But what is being reported is that, you know, he died from an overdose of Percocet prescribed to him by his doctor to deal with pain that he was suffering from a hip problem, and that he was going to need an operation. And so this man was a tirelessly touring the world. I don't know how many concerts he has given in his lifetime, and in fact, never stopped working, whether it's to smaller crowds or large crowds, never stopped working. But you know, anybody who watched his work and his form of artistry know it was physically challenging, and I can understand why he might have some hip problems later on in life. And so, you know, and Percocet was to deal with that pain. I actually got prescribed some Percocet in an emergency room because doctors misdiagnosed my injury, my back injury, and had me in some rehab. Ain't did an MRI, nothing like that, know the extent of the nerve damage. And so I'm in excruciating pain, and that Percocet knocked it right out. I don't know if they prescribe that to sometimes to women giving birth, maybe not. You know, I don't think that they would. I think that's different, an epidural or whatever. I don't know. My ex-wife gave natural birth with no drugs and what have you. But anyway, they're saying he OD'd on that. So cannabis could have helped him to manage his pain. Cause I heard somebody, you know, I read, you know, somebody made the comment that he was alive, a law-abiding citizen, and you know, he didn't do illegal drugs. And, you know, again, you know, anybody that knows his history and followed him, or even Denise Matthews, I think is Vanity's real name, and she wrote the book, and she talked about their drug use as rock stars, no different than anybody else. You know, no different than anybody else. And I think she, you know, suffered from kidney problems because that she attributed to her drug use. So he used to use what white people has classified as illegal drugs by, you know, getting politicians to pass laws to deem this substance and that substance. But this was a legal substance. Now, you know, as he got older, whatnot, you know, I guess he was like, you know, I don't know if he used cannabis at any time in his life. I don't know. I can't say, but I certainly know that as opposed to Percocet, that he could have went to Colorado, he could have went to California, he could have went to a number of states and got hooked up with a strain of cannabis that would have helped him deal with that pain. And nobody has ever OD'd on cannabis. So I'm saying that if this is true, if he OD'd on Percocet trying to deal with hip pain and you know, having to need surgery, and this is what the doctor prescribed him. And I don't know what the status of Minnesota's cannabis laws are or what have you, but that's where he lived mostly. But, you know, perhaps, you know, he was influenced by respectability politics that ceased to you know, demonize people who use cannabis, not fully understanding all the different reasons that people use cannabis and whatnot. But, you know, of course, the pharmaceutical industry used the media to push these notions and control the minds of the masses. So maybe he didn't use cannabis. He was like, I'll just, you know, get what this doctor, I'm going to trust this doctor. I'm going to trust this doctor to tell me how to better manage my pain. and the risk involved. I'm going to trust him to tell me the truth. And, you know, and I'm, you know, what are all of these different side effects over here? Look, darn, 10 side effects. And you know, cannabis, he could have grown himself to deal with that pain. But society, the pharmaceutical industry, politicians, lobbyists from different, you know, private prisons, you know, the police unions, you know, slave catchers of America want to push this notion to demonize a plant that people have been using for, man, they found cannabis seeds in the tombs of the Egyptians. How many years ago was that? So, might he still be with us and others as well, others with us. Maybe all these people wouldn't be dying from heroin overdose. Now I see these politicians want to actually listen to some scientists in some of these other states and saying, you know, that if we legal, you know, cannabis, I'm trying not to use the MJ word because of its racist roots, but, you know, recognizing that cannabis, instead of putting all these people on these, what they call opioids, they got the different names for the drugs. I can't think of them all right now. And they get you hooked, highly addictive, highly, these are narcotics and what, or former narcotics, opioids. Get you hooked, and now the doctor cut you off. You can't get no, you know, prescription legally anymore. And you know, they done got you hooked on this, and now, so you use heroin. That's the next best thing. You know, doc won't give me no pills, so they want to act like I ain't in pain, and well, so I'm going to use heroin, and then it just, the, you know, now they're trying to treat those people with cannabis, recommending that. So, you know, just think about, that's one of the things, because Prince did make you think about politics and social issues and ask questions and, you know, do you believe in God and why. He talked about the death penalty in his music. He talked about, again, war, famine, and forever the activist. And I'm not surprised to hear, you know, that he supported with his money, like many celebrities before him, you know, used their wealth from the butter biscuits they was able to get from that, from, you know, they, whatever people activity area they were working in. And but they shared those butter biscuits with the rest of us. They you know, they was infiltrated. They got into that world. Yeah, they smiled in the white people's faces just so they could get those big paychecks. But then, you know, a lot of them, like Harry Belafonte, was, you know, helping to make sure that armed militant groups had arms, had rifles. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, go off too far off of, you know, Prince. And but he provoked that type of thought. You know, I think he was also anti-Second Amendment and anti-gun, but I ain't mad at him. I don't agree with him on that. But again, he provoked that type of thought. He wasn't all just about, you know, sexy women in camisoles and what have you dancing, you know, on stage. It, yes, very sexually energized man. Again, like I stated earlier, he brought men and women together on that dance floor, didn't he? Yeah. Yeah, he did. Yeah. So, but if you have any thoughts, you can share those with us. I don't even have the studio line open, but the conference line is 704-951. Excuse me, no, the conference line is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-32-POUND. 549-32-POUND. Anytime you would like to speak, hit *6 and 1. I'm just about to come up on a break, but we're going to hit, you know, some of his more thought-provoking tracks that he produced. Again, this is like what they might have called a child prodigy. you know, always playing music. But what he's not really known for, man, was, and I think Dave Chappelle, anybody who watched Dave Chappelle's show, when he had a show in, you know, the little things with Eddie Murphy's brother. What is Eddie Murphy's brother? I can't think of his brother's name right now. Who's been in a lot of stuff here lately. But he told the stories, you know, and he talked about Prince being an athlete and could play basketball. And you know, you look at him and you, you know, judge him based on appearance. And next thing you know, he crossing you over like, you know, Allen Iverson before Allen Iverson, you know, crossing you up like that. He did play on the high school basketball team and what have you. So just all around, you know, talented individual. And also people were talking about how funny he was and make you laugh. I heard this guy last night, I think it was Van Jones, might have been somebody else who was close to him and knew him, said that he could have had a career, you know, as a comedian, anything he chose to do. And obviously his first love was music. Second was women. He, you know, and he cared about the world. He cared about social and political issues. And that, so I had to give him that credit of introducing me as a teenager to the people activity area of politics. Not, you know, not to say that I had never heard of politics or anything like that. I've seen protests and stuff on TV. I remember as a child and you know, going to a park one day, attending a Nation of Islam meeting and in Detroit. I think, you know, Malcolm X was in Detroit, had the mosque in Detroit, in that same area at time. I do, you know, remember these things from elementary school and then later middle school in Detroit, junior high, and on up. But, you know, when you listen to an artist and you really get hooked on their music and then you listen to what they had to say, I had to say he was the biggest influence into making me think about political, social issues on a global perspective. And I guess a lot of people wouldn't recognize that because they would just look at the way he was dressed. You know, again, a lot of people would assume by the way he was dressed, his flair, his extravagance, his you know, sense of style and showmanship, would assume he was gay. You know, you look at the way he wore his hair, obviously wore makeup on stage, and you know, most of the pictures I see him in. But again, he challenged you on these things. Prince was like metrosexual before I ever heard the term metrosexual, which is, and from what I understand about it, is to describe somebody who dresses in an effeminate way, but they're not gay, they're not homosexual, they are in fact sexually heterosexual, but this is, you know, and they challenge you like that. And I don't know if he was doing that on purpose or if that was just, you know, as a gimmick, as you know, to challenge people, to grab attention as an artist, a new artist coming out, because he's only like 17, 18 around there. I've heard people contradict certain things, but I think he first signed that Warner Brothers contract at 16. Now, he might not have came out with that first album until he was 18, because there was some haggling over that. They was going to let other people produce, and he was like, no, nobody's going to produce me, nobody's going to put their imprint on my music, this is my music, this, I'm producing a record. And, you know, people thinking that he wasn't intellectually or capable of going into this studio and being able to do these complicated things and in the process. And then they said, you know, after he started laying a few tracks, oh, this kid know what he was doing, knew what he was doing. I mean, but just to be that young and to challenge authority like that and to hang on to your individuality. Now, obviously he needed a better lawyer. He had, you know, so he didn't get into such a terrible contract, but to even challenge people and saying, telling these record executives as a 17-year-old, you know, no, so-and-so is not going to produce me. You know, I'm a fan of their work, but this is my work. And I'm, as an 18-year-old, non-conformist, that, you know, that's one of the other things that, you know, I think he promoted a lot was non-conformity and in your face. And I don't care what you think about me. You could make these assumptions about me. Am I? Really? Do you know? You know, just that cat and mouse game, the intellectual chessboard and what have you. So, you know, it was sad to hear about his passing, but I know Cleo Monago, who's been a guest on this program, he was on Facebook saying that he had talked to Prince before and that Prince had, back in the 80s, you know, I guess through his work and because, again, Prince was an activist. A lot of these stories just now coming out because he didn't broadcast to the world what he was doing in the community and what have you for spiritual reasons and whatnot. But Cleo Monago was saying that he didn't want to die early, like a whole lot of people, you know, they have all this success. He didn't want to be one of those black men who had this success and then die early. So 57, you know, I'll be 50 this year. Okay. And so that is early when you have so much left to give to the world. But, you know, again, I asked the question, did the pharmaceutical industries, doctors, and respectability politics kill him by giving him these dangerous pharmaceutical drugs to help him manage his hip pain when he could have just, you know, been prescribed cannabis? Then he wouldn't be having any kind of addiction and abuse problems or taking too much because, you know, to try to deal with the pain when nobody has ever over. You can't smoke too much cannabis. You can't do it. You can't ingest too much cannabis and die. Then we got all these slaves on the plantations of the prisons today for doing what? Selling cannabis. Seems to me that a lot of doctors and pharmaceutical executives and lobbyists are the ones who should be filling those prisons. Anyway, we're going to take a station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name, of course, is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Again, if you have any questions or comments, we'll be on air for the next, 26 minutes. You can give us a call at 641-715-3660-549-032-POUND. Hit *6 and 1. To comment. The studio line is now open. That is 704-951-5030. We'll be right back on the other side. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Man, I'm really having some technical issue, but I identify the issues. Just need to replace some equipment. And we will be able to do that as our new crowdfunding campaign is starting to show some good results as people show their support with contributions to the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project that was founded in 2008 by yours truly. And the t-shirts, a lot of people are starting to say black radio stations matter. It's not a matter of you saying they matter or not. They matter to us. We think it's important that we hear grassroots voices, that we have a place where we can express our opinions and viewpoints without, you know, fear of being shut down because we don't want you talking bad about this corporation or that corporation or this sponsor or that sponsor. Totally people-powered platform. So just again, I want to remind you, you can just click on the tab that says Crowdfunding Black Media, either on blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org, and you will find out more information about why black you need to work with us to make black talk radio stations matter again and reclaim the influence that they once had despite the laws and regulations and codes and the unfair advantage corporations were given to take over the terrestrial radio stations. I do have a plan. Being a former communications specialist in the United States military for 6 years, I have a plan. I have a plan of how to work within the bounds of the regulations and the laws and whatnot and reclaim what we have. But, you know, it's going to take, like everything, funding for this vision. And one of those ways we try to raise those funds is by and spreading a message and implanting in your mind that black radio stations matter. Put that positive affirmation out there into the universe so that the great creator has something to act on. Instead of putting negative seeds out there, then we get a return on the negative seeds. There's a difference between understanding, trying to teach people how things work, but it's then another where, you know, you're putting a bad message in people's minds. And we want to try to do a little bit more of the positive thing. But again, we can't sugarcoat things. We got to be honest with people. And we try to do that on Black Talk Radio Network. The different hosts are free to speak their minds. They have their own views and their own opinions. But the Black Talk Media Project thinks that they should be able to do that and have a safe space, a safe digital space to reach people and express those views. So that's what we're about, one of the things we are about. So thank you to those who have gotten some shirts. I see some people had a shirt and they wanted some more. And so we appreciate you. We appreciate you, too. All right, moving on. Again, man, Prince, man, he really challenged you to think. Again, Controversy, that album right there, I would say that was, you know, one of his more political albums, but also one of his most, in terms of, you know, sexual albums as well, with titles such as Controversy, Sexuality, Do Me Baby, a classic. All right, classic on the dance floor. Private Joy, Ronnie Talked to Russia, talking about the nuclear Cold War that was going on at the time. Then Less Work, that's not one of those that you want the kids to be listening to. Annie Christian, and I'm not even going to say the last one. But again, this dude, he really pushed the boundaries. He really, really pushed the boundaries. And, you know, again, just trying to keep it real, I would not want teens today to listen to some of those tracks. But then, you know, I guess I had to come up with a 14 safe to listen track, playlist. But Controversy was one of those sounds. Here's a sample of that very popular song. At least it was popular to me. It wasn't the most popular track off that album, but Controversy.
Controversy. I can't understand human curiosity. Controversy. Was it good for you? Was I what? controversy.
So that was controversy. Let me repeat those tracks again. Sorry about that. Again, having a little technical issue. But again, let me just repeat these lyrics, you know. Again, he was a spirit. He was actually a Christian. I heard later he joined the Jehovah Witness. I got one side of my family that's Jehovah Witnesses, but they believe in Jesus Christ, and they came through in his music, and you know he would talk about spiritual principles. But if you was a Christian, and I wouldn't even say a Christian, but just a scholar of the Bible, and you know you would hear that. You would hear that in the music, and that was in controversy as well. But again, I mean, let me read just a couple of these lyrics. People call me rude. I wish we all were nude. I wish there was no black and white. I wish there was no rules. People call me rude. I wish we all were nude. I wish there was no black and white. I wish there were no rules. So again, you know, challenging the status quo, acknowledging that there are rules, in fact, that establish racism and white supremacy. What do you think he means when he talks about, I wish there was no black or white? He's talking about these labels that was created by the 1600 slave codes, I believe, beginning with the colony of Virginia. And they caught on and they got popular and whatnot. And you know, you should know the rest, but I shouldn't say that because a lot of people don't really study up on history. So he, again, you know, challenged you on so many levels. Here's another lyric out of that. Do I believe in God? Do I believe in me? Let me tell you, yes, you know, on both counts. Some people want to die so they can be free. I said, life is just a game. We're all just the same. Do you want to play? So, you know, there are people who want to die so that they can be free. Me, in a way, I think I've expressed that. I don't care about living or dying. Malcolm expressed that. You know, there's a clip that I've played where he talks about he lives life like he's dead already. And he has no fear of anything whatsoever. So, you know, very deep artist. I did not come on air suspecting that I would be talking about Prince, but I was like, you know what? I really was a fan. Really was a fan. And let me just, you know, give my two cents on the historical record and present a side to him that you might not hear from mainstream media and what have you. But also the underlying political issue that we can draw from this political, social, you know, these respectability politics that seek to demonize people and what have you. But, you know, perhaps if he had been somewhere and somebody had advised him to take cannabis, to use cannabis, you ain't got to smoke cannabis. I heard he didn't smoke cigarettes or nothing like that. But, you know, you don't have everybody think that ingesting cannabis only consists of rolling up blunts and people smoking them, you know, looking like Snoop Dogg or Lil Wayne or something like that. No, cannabis, there's so many different strains of cannabis, and a lot of them are edible. And people put them in cookies, people make smoothies out of them, they bake them in brownies. I mean, there are just so many different recipes. Again, this has been around for tens of thousands of years. You know, I'm not, you know, really want to get into how old is man. You got people want to talk about 6,000 years, the creation story. Then others want to say, you know, a modern man been around maybe hundreds of thousands of years or what have you. But we know the historical record going back at least tens of thousands, going back to the tombs of the pharaohs, they were using cannabis. Just all over indigenous people using cannabis. But, you know, no big deal. Shouldn't been a big deal, nothing like that. But then some white supremacists decided they wanted to target some non-white people. From my research, it started in this company to target Mexicans. Then later to target black people because of integration and white women hanging out in jazz bars. And, you know, all you had to do was go look at the propaganda of the time period. Telling people, oh, yeah, your white daughters will be smoking that weed. And next thing you know, they hanging out in the basement of a jazz bar. And after the show, they're in the back room, you know, having sex with black musicians and what have you. And, you know, we got to outlaw this terrible weed. And you know, and it just continued on to the three strikes you're out, you know, modern day. Slave catching rules that they got in place today. Then people, you know, they believe these stereotypes or these cartoonish depictions of people who use certain substances and what have you. And then they shun things that might could save their life and provide a better health outcome. When somebody, you know, told Prince, if we believe the reports that, you know, he died from a Percocet overdose, that, you know, that was a good drug to use to manage his pain that he was having in his hips that he needed surgery for. Man, it's just terrible. I mean, I'm trying to think of this artist's name. I didn't plan to mention this, but it comes to me. Bob Marley, one of his children, they just open up. You know, because we've heard people say, there may be some truth to it. I don't know, because it take money when you want to play, you know, when you want to play capitalist in this country. It take money. It take, you know, favor. It take knowing the right people and this and that. It takes all those things. But I've heard, like, you know, a lot of people say, and I've never really investigated, that black people are shut out of the cannabis business and these white men is making money and all this and that. And, you know, it is messed up if you got a felony that you can't get business license to sell cannabis. But because, you know, back then we said it was terrible and you still got that, man. Those felonies should be expunged, but let me not get off on a side issue. But I've been reading Snoop Dogg is in the cannabis business, and now I just read this article on this reggae site that one of the Marley sons has just opened up. I think it's called L.A. Marley or something like that. Now they're in the cannabis business. There are a lot of these artists that are you know, it is open now. We hope they can open up doors and do business with black farmers. Who I've interviewed black farmers on this program, you know, in relation to, you know, the deal with the agriculture department paying reparations to black farmers for racism being practiced against them. But, you know, I asked him about cannabis and the movement to legalize, and he said that, you know, the farmers that he represent, a lot of them out there on the West Coast, you know, were ready to grow cannabis. It grow like weeds, man. It grows like weeds. It's not a hard plant. I don't want to make it seem too simplistic, because then when you get into different strains and, you know, being a botanist, somebody that's a botanist can, you know, you blend the different strains to get the desired effect that you want. Then they making these cannabis oils to treat people with epilepsy and all of that. Instead of giving them these pharmaceuticals, man, So I hope that they open up some doors and do some business with some black farmers. But again, how respectability politics is killing us. Not only is it getting people stopped and frisked, thrown in jail, forced to pay fines, some of them ending up with prison sentences, but it's also killing us on the terms of we're trusting the white supremacists to tell us what drugs or what drugs we can use to treat our health and what ails us. And we can ignore all the science white massa say you can't use it. So it's best you take what this doctor gonna prescribe to you. And then you end up dead. Man, time for us to challenge our thinking on so many different levels. Always evaluate, reevaluate, and then reevaluate again. In case you miss something. In case other questions come up later. So, you know, can't say I'm a Mr. Man because I wasn't attached to him personally like that. Didn't know him, had no relationship with him. I can't say I'm going to miss him. But I'm certainly saddened that he has transitioned if he wasn't ready to make that transition, which it sounds like he wasn't ready to make that transition. So I am saddened. But I'm not going to miss him because that spirit is eternal. We have his music, which is hard to get on the internet. Man, it's hard to get. But again, he was not trying to be, let these people rob him. And I'd rather, okay, don't put out my videos or none of my tracks, nothing with my name on it if I'm not making the majority of the money on it. That's why you don't see his stuff on YouTube like that and these other file sharing stuff, because he, you know, he's fighting. It wasn't that he, you know, didn't want us to have his music. He was like, no. If this man is going, you know, he's my master. If he's, you know, making the bulk of the profit, he's the master and I'm the slave, and I ain't trying to be no slave. So I'd rather, you know, just sit on the shelf until I get my masters back in terms of the music. Now I'm, you know, master of my music that I have already created. So, man, really going to mix his creativity and, you know, how he was lending resources to the grassroots movement. I heard, you know, people talking about he was inspired by the young people rising up in the Black Lives Matter movement and the movement against police brutality, because again, you know, he covered these issues in his music. I mean, his catalog is huge, you know, it really is, not to mention the stuff that he wrote for others. And it wasn't all just about sex and rock and roll or any of that, just partying. I mean, it was also made you think about social and political issues. So I just want to recognize the contribution he made to my life to bringing these issues up, you know, and also for making it easy for young men and women to communicate and come together and love one another and whatnot. So, you know, my friends and other fans of Prince, true friends, fans of the ballads, know what I'm talking about. So I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. Tando Radio Show will be coming on at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time today. That's Tando Radio Show. Make sure you stay tuned for Brother Dave. I believe Race Treaty should be on air at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Just check Black Talk Radio. Subscribe to us on social media at Black Talk Radio Network, as well as Black Talk Radio Network on Facebook. Or you can also just subscribe right there on our homepage. Put your email in anytime there is a new post being published about an upcoming program or article or blog post, something like that. You'll get email notifications, so take advantage of that as well. So, you know, rest in new power, Prince, man. Definitely, going to miss your creativity, your caring spirit, and what have you. So, peace and blessings to all.
But I'm not like others.